Hello and welcome to It's Not My Fault. The OSU Podcast is Not Popular, episode 61. My name is Justin.
And I'm here as well.
Oh, really? You're here as well? No name mentioning or anything like that?
Well, you see, unlike you, Justin, Ellen, actually was here on time for once, so...
We were both here on time. It's just that my Skype decided... better yet, my internet decided to be weird. We've been over this weirdness of my internet before, so we can only hope for the best for this podcast. Listeners, you'll totally know if something happened during this podcast, during the edits. You'll definitely know. So anyways, what's up, Ellen? What's new?
It's raining. It hasn't stopped raining for like 2 days now.
Yeah, in that area, yeah, that's basically a big story in my job. Because one of the baseball teams are playing and... or trying to play, and it's not going great.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Nats Twitter, like, posted their final score at, like, 2 a.m. this morning after a doubleheader where even the first game had
Game had delay. I was maybe a seat away from the person that had to work that game at my job. Not fun to be around. Oh, man. But yeah, I guess it rained here today, but I don't think it's been quite as bad as it is in your area, for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Pennsylvania is just under one gigantic rain cloud at this point.
Yeah.
And my roommate and I are having conversations about, should we be worried about Hurricane Florence? Like, do we need to get sandbags in case the HVAC unit decides to flood again?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be, like, in the either southern, like, what was it, Virginia, the Carolinas, I think that's where...
Yeah, they're thinking it's going to come ashore around there, but it's probably going to move north, so my roommate and I are just worried about it parking over the D.C. area and then dumping.
Right. Yeah, just track it and see where it's at and then go from there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, enough about actual hurricanes and... potential
enough about
like
real
that.
World things. Let's talk about anime.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about what you've been up to. How about that?
I already told you what I've been up to. It's been raining.
Okay, well, I mean, it's been raining here too. But, yeah, I have not... I've been trying to catch up to, like, say this every season. I try to catch up to everything. But, took time out to actually go watch Perfect Blue.
Yeah, I did theaters. As well, since they're doing that special two-day-only showing in the U.S.,
Yes, and decided to go see the subtitles,
mm-hmm, so, same.
All Japanese, and I went there, I fortunately was late. obviously no ads or anything like that, so I probably missed like the first, I mean it wasn't that bad, that much time, like 10 or 12 minutes, something like that, but I wish
did you
I
see
didn't.
Like the opening like idol act or?
No, I probably missed that, unless they were... showing it during the flashbacks. Unless
yeah,
that
it opens.
It
opens with an idol act. You probably missed that, which is a shame because the songs are really darn catchy.
Okay, yeah, and then I guess that's when she was it Mima.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, when she decides she wants to quit being an idol and become an actress.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I mean, I think it's more like because I jumped in just randomly like that. I mean, I know I didn't miss much, but. I like to try to see everything from start to finish, so I was a bit bummed about that. But other than that, before I actually get to my thoughts on the film, was your theater crowded? Because mine was pretty full.
Mm-hmm. This theater I was in is a little smaller. Like it's a big multiplex, you know, like 20 screens there, but that particular screen was kind of smaller. So it seemed pretty full, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I went to the heart of New York City for this one, Times Square. It was pretty packed, which is nice to see. I have heard that on Twitter, like there were some theaters that didn't, like that had Perfect Blue and didn't have that many people. But I just hope that like there's another showing tomorrow, Monday, for the dub. Maybe that will get more people as well. I can only hope for the best.
Yeah, I was a little sad that it looked like the video was probably, like, a DVD remaster. It just obviously wasn't 4K. Like, it was a little fuzzy, and there were some areas where, like, I remember, like, in the very first scene, there's three people talking, and only one, and when one person is speaking, you can see them kind of jiggling around, like, that person had been animated separately, and that was the one that was getting moved around when it was being photographed put together.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man, I wish this was a nicer remaster. Yeah, I still enjoyed the film, but I was like, I know this could be better. I couldn't actually believe it had been made in 97, because I was like, wow, I've seen movies that look so much better quality-wise from 1997. I thought it was like 1989 or something.
Yeah, that was my first, that was my other thought too. Like, coming in, I thought like, oh, G-Kiss got the rights to this, and maybe it's got like a really good remastering and everything.
We don't even know if they have really, anything beyond like theatrical streaming rights.
Yeah, I can only hope they do. But, yeah, I watched, I was actually expecting it to be a little bit cleaner than what it showed, even though it does look really good, even by today, it still looks pretty fine, but, like, I thought, like, some stuff would be cleaned up, and it would look better. And did you notice any problems with the subs? The closed captions and everything?
Yeah, there were definitely one or two times where, like, things were just oddly spaced, like, the kerning was off. I only noticed it once or twice, though.
Yeah, I noticed that. There were times where I don't think the timing matched up with the movement of the valves. Mm-hmm. Like, I noticed that a couple times. So, yeah, overall, like, it was like, oh, this... thought it was going to be, like... Maybe that's just because I expected a bit too much. I don't know. That's all I can really say about that part of it. But as for the film, this is probably my second favorite Satoshi Kon film. Tokyo Godfathers is by far and away number one.
Oh, same on both counts here.
Which
makes me feel a little silly that I like his least real films, but I just like those better. Like, I couldn't stand Paranoia Agent when I saw it.
I need to finish it. Like, it showed, like, Paranoia Agent on Adult Swim a long time ago, and I loved what I was watching of it, but I just fell off of it and I never really finished it. So I do want to finish that at some point. The only other Kon film I watched was Paprika, which
Millennium Actress is also fairly solid.
That Paprika and Millennium Actress, I don't know if I liked it that much.
Oh, okay.
Like, I appreciate it, like, on a technical and, like, watchability and stuff like that, but I don't know if, like, none of those films make me want to watch it again. Like, I'm fine watching Paprika once. I'm fine watching Millennium Actress once. Perfect Blue I want to see again.
Yeah, Perfect Blue I would like to own a nice copy of after this.
Yeah.
Although, if I may say, nobody told me going in that this would be, like, such an R-rated film. Like, I know, yeah, it's psychological.
Oh, no.
I knew, psychological thriller, you know, concerning, you know, an idol. I knew that, but no one would ever give me a really good summary of it, so I was caught off guard by the fact that Mimi films a rape scene, like, with quite a bit of detail. Like, you don't see a dick, but it's a very intense moment.
Yeah,
and also there's a difference between saying, oh, it's a psychological thriller, and saying, okay, multiple people die by having their eyeballs stabbed out of them with a screwdriver.
Yes, that was creepy. And
I know, and it's so frustrating when people are like, well, we said it was a psychological thriller, you should expect it. I'm like, no, there is a lot of things you can do in a psychological thriller which are disturbing and upsetting, but don't involve, like, blunt trauma to the face, you know?
Right. And then, like, they really, like, show it too. Like, they really, like, she really went in there. Like, whoa.
Yeah, and it's like, if I was the kind of person who hadn't known what Perfect Blue was going in, I'd looked up, like, specific ratings, I probably would have seen this. But this is a case of where, like, I'd heard from the fandom that this was a good movie, so I wanted to see it. And the fandom just never mentioned that this was bad. Although, I did see someone chatting after the film on Twitter that they had read the novelization that Seven Seas had put out recently, the one that Kon based the film off of, and they said that it's quite different. They said that if the movie is about the immense level of, like, intenseness, you know, with, like, imagery and stuff you can stand, you should not read the novel, since apparently the novel goes even more disturbing in some ways.
Oh, really? And I think
they said, like, the opening scene is, like, a child getting killed from the point of view of the child, and it's supposed to be titillating.
From the novel?
Yeah.
The only thing I remember, and I've only read the first maybe couple pages of that. Like, the first page from I remember the novel, it gets into the main idol feeling like she was being stalked already.
Hmm.
That's what I remember. But as I should point out, I bought that a while ago, and I meant to actually finish, make time to read all of it, but I haven't yet. Would have been nice, because I know, like,
Your TV pile is enormous.
That's one, and then I know this movie is inspired by Hercules. It's not a one-to-one.
Oh yeah,
for sure. So yeah, they're definitely different novels. They're definitely different works in a sense, for sure. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say my only experience with Perfect Blue first starts with the fact that I think it aired on TV at some point during my childhood.
Dang.
I think it did. I really do. I really believe it did, because I felt like there's a scene I remember.
Is it the bathtub scene?
No, it was the one where she was stabbing.
Okay, because I was going to say, there was definitely a couple of scenes in the film where I was like, I have seen this in other movies that came out later. Like the bathtub scene and the jumping on the light pole scene.
Pulse,
I feel like I've seen other movies copy those.
That's the pole scene that I've also seen. That's it. That's all I remember. But I never really fully watched Perfect Blue. And in some way, I didn't really watch Perfect Blue because I missed the first couple of minutes of it. But yeah, that and it's Satoshi Kon, so I was like, some of his works kind of go pretty deep. And I heard Perfect Blue gets pretty dark. So that's how I came into it. The rape scene did catch me off guard, though.
Yeah, it did.
I could feel
I could see why it was in the story and everything, and I felt like the story, like, had the characters respond, you know, realistically to it. Like, you see that some other characters are caught off guard by, you know, just how violent this scene they're filming is, after all, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But still, it doesn't change the fact that Mimi's a good actress. She genuinely looks like she's getting raped there.
Yeah. Did you figure out? Well, I guess we're getting. Well, I guess we don't have to really spoil it, per se. But I do want to know: did you figure out who was the killer?
I did not completely figure out before the end what was going on. I had a pretty good guess. There was one reveal towards the very end that I wasn't expecting, but I actually kind of liked how. At the very, very end, I felt like the movie was more straightforward, where you were able to pull apart the pieces and see what had been real, what wasn't, and that it all made a cohesive sense. And it was funny, because I saw a couple of people on Twitter being like, oh, I wished it had been, you know, more ambiguous, and it's like, have you seen Millennium Actress? Because that's the one, the more ambiguous ending. And they were like, no, I've only seen, like, this, and, like, one other cone film, and I'm like, you should go see the others, then, because it sounds like what you want is from something else. Like, no, give me, like, the straightforward ending for once, please.
Did you stay till the end of the film?
I saw a little bit of the Cone interview afterwards, and then I just left.
Yeah,
because like, I had to pay for parking, so.
During that Cone interview, I was talking about, probably could have made it a little bit more vague.
Yeah.
Okay, Cone. Okay, sure. For me, like, I'm going to take a different spin on that. That's because, like, at some point, the constant repeating of stuff, like, towards the middle of the film, or I guess maybe towards the end, I guess, kind of got to me a little bit. I was like, it's a little bit too much, because it's like, how far out of reality is she in? But the one thing that helped me up was the fact that I thought I figured out the killer immediately. Like, I figured, like, I guess this will be kind of a spoiler about, well, if you see the film, you'll get it, but,
well, it hasn't been available for quite a few years, Justin.
Yeah,
probably
true.
A lot of our listeners haven't actually seen it.
Okay.
Which is why I was being vague there.
Okay, fine. But the point is, I figured it out. There was one comment the killer made early in the film, and I guess I'll tell you after the podcast, so you know. But, there was a comment she made that was made earlier in the film that made me go, okay, that doesn't make any sense. So you're suspect number one on my list? So when that happened towards the end, I was like, oh, no. See, this is it. Now it all comes together. And then further theories that came about that I was thinking about, oh, maybe that's why this happened. So now it all came together for me. So I guess we came, like, to different conclusions regarding, like, how the story came together. But it was still a really good film. It really was.
Those idol songs are really catchy, though.
How are you saying we should have, like, a Perfect Blue soundtrack and get those on there, right? Is that what you're saying?
More like I'm probably just going to go to YouTube at some point and re-listen to them.
Fair enough. All right. I guess hey, I have no other. I mean, there's other stuff I'm trying to catch up to. I read Sleepy Princess in the Demon Castle Volume 2. Still really funny. Just letting you all know. But other than that, we can move on to news if you like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Let's get over to this super fan pack that I kind of messed up on Twitter. This was, I believe this was announced at Crunchyroll Expo a few weeks ago.
Crunchyroll Expo is only last weekend, so yeah.
Okay. So yeah, during that Labor Day weekend, which I had to work, sadly, or that Labor Day, like exactly on Labor Day, I had to work that day. Crunchyroll announced their panel that they were starting a super fan pack, so you could get a bunch of like companies. I know Verb, I think, is in it, but the bigger, like one of the big news is that J Novel Club and Annie Uta is also in this super fan pack. So I think it's like $14.99, and if you purchase that, you can get a membership to both J Novel Club and Annie Uta. So me reading it wrong thought that like, oh, you can probably start reading J Novel stuff on Crunchyroll. Whoops. not my best moment right there. Not great. But yeah, that's the gist of it. You get super fan, sign up for super fan pack, you get all of that stuff.
Cool beans.
I wonder how cool the beans is. The thing is, I would say, like, personally, this makes more sense to purchase than, well, I guess to me personally, but like if I want to get Verb, like, I can watch all the Funimation, maybe Crunchyroll stuff, but then I have to get the other stuff I don't really care about. But for this, anime songs.
Well, with Verb, you can also download stuff to, like, your phone and things for offline viewing.
Yeah, I guess that would also be the appeal for that, too. I know people really like that, like having ownership. So
internship for the past couple days this week, I didn't quite have Wi-Fi access until like late in the week, so it was really nice to be able to download stuff on Amazon so I could watch during lunch.
So you are the one that wants to download and own stuff.
No, not to own, I just want to be able to watch Banana Fish during my lunch, which meant I had to download it to my phone so I could watch it without having to use Wi-Fi or data.
Right.
Yeah, it's totally not about owning, because I don't want to own my stuff digitally, really. I want it physically.
Okay.
Justin and I have taken classes on, like, preservation of things. Digital is hard as shit.
Yeah. Okay. I believe you. I believe you.
And continuing with Crunchyroll, they have licensed some more manga? Like, Crunchyroll, are you making a comeback with the manga? Is this attempt two?
I don't know.
Anyway. Right? So they're bringing over Talentless Nana, The Delinquent, and The Otaku. And then one title, which might sound familiar to listeners, One Room of Happiness, which is the series where the live-action adaptation was canceled following some suspicions that the manga was based on a real-world kidnapping?
Yeah, I feel like we talked about this on the podcast, or if we didn't...
We did, yeah.
Okay, we did? Okay. Yeah, that was... That was crazy. That was weird. Like, it's so rare for... Especially, like, I was trying to think, like, what... a certain works like that have happened where... That's been an accusation. Like, you know, like, in most... And pretty much every book, it's like, this is a real... unless it's, like, a non-fiction or whatever. If it's a fiction book, this is a work of fiction, names, likenesses, etc. Could be fake or something like that. So, yeah... This, yeah, so Crunchyroll is bringing that manga over, so I'm curious to see if that's gonna, it's not out yet, but I guess it's gonna show up at some point this month. But it's not just that, we talked about, is Crunchyroll getting back into manga? They also said in their, like, news piece that they're gonna bring over more Square Enix titles. How much, well, I'm not gonna do a bet, but I'm wondering if a couple of those titles, if one of those titles is going to be Happy Sugar Life, and the other one is High Score Girl, because both are Square Enix titles. I'm wondering.
What I would also do is take a look and see at what Square Enix titles are going to have anime this fall.
Those are also options too. My guess is, yeah, those are, like, I think I sent on a tweet saying, yeah, they're going to bring up more Square Enix manga, probably five more. How about that? I did not have the courage to be like, oh, they're also going to decide to bring over Happy Sugar Life and High School Girl. I had no courage. But yeah, I guess we'll see how that will do, but they obviously have to put it up at some point, so we'll see for that. Let's get into some more licenses. This is some good licensing good announcement text here. Echevez went on the Reverse Thieves podcast and spoke to Elaine.
Ed Chavez of Denpa Books, formerly a Vertical, formerly a Faku.
And then he announced during the end of the podcast that they licensed TAA's, it's called TAA, I'm not sure if it's the correct pronunciation, but licensed Today's Menu for Emilia Family. Oh, it sounds kind of weird how he said that.
Yes. It's that Fate cooking show spinoff that's been airing irregularly since the winter.
So if you're a Fate fan, you're probably going to be interested in that. And maybe if you're into cooking, maybe you're going to be into that. That was interesting. I have to admit, I did not quite know the backstory behind how Ed Chavez got back into the industry. I actually did not know that.
Well, he never left. He was working with Faku the whole time. He wasn't at Vertical, so he never left.
From what I understood, he actually wasn't in the industry for a bit. Like, he was pretty sure he was done, but then what happened was, as I was listening to the podcast, he was explaining that Faku was having trouble with a license, and then they ended up reaching out to Ed to say, hey, can you help us out a little bit? And then he smoothed that over. Then, obviously, he then got hired to work at Faku. Then he's been there for, I guess, what? About a year, right? Has it been a year?
Maybe at some point we'll actually interview people instead.
Oh, no, I think, no, because he talked about it in the podcast. That's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is all from the podcast. Where he was talking about that. So,
I can't believe you'll listen to other podcasts, but you won't listen to my manga and your ears.
I'm making more time for podcasts. Chill out.
Nope.
So, yeah, he's talking about how he's back into it. What's Denpa going to be up to? Kind of remarked about how, like, certain publishers weren't being, like, I guess from what this says, when he says that there were publishers that in Japan that had their manga or waiting for people to talk to them, but nobody really talked to them anymore. So I guess that kind of goes over, like, in what he said in, like, other interviews, like, oh, there's, like, kind of a void of stuff of manga that's not being published in, like, North America and stuff, so he's hoping Denpa will fill the void.
And by void, we mean the void of, like, really weird stuff.
Yes, maybe that. Yes. definitely curious to see how that's going to go for sure.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, and Kodansha decided, you know, it's been too long. We got to announce some more digital titles, as they do so frequently. So that they've got Peach Girl Next, which is already out, and I'm guessing this is a sequel to Peach Girl, the manga Tokyo Pop put out back in the day. Okay. And they're putting out that as well. And they've also licensed Haru Tsukushima's The Walls Between Us and Ren Kawahara's Ao-chan Can't Study. That's not related at all to the title running in Weekly Shonen Jump right?
Definitely not.
Okay, I got confused when I saw that first. I was like, wait a minute, I thought this had this one.
There's a big difference between We Never Learn and Ao-chan Can Study. Wait a minute. About there being a big difference. this actually feels like a lighter month for Kodansha digital licenses, and that's probably because New York Comic Con and Anime New York City is upcoming, although they probably announced stuff before Anime New York City, but they got New York Comic Con upcoming, so they're probably gonna make announcements there.
You mean at Anime Fest, right?
Oh no, the regular Comic Con.
Regular. They're just avoiding Anime
they're
Fest.
I mean, I have no idea. I haven't looked at the schedule yet, but I wouldn't. I mean, I don't think any. Like, I know Viz is probably not going to be in Pier 30. Not going to be already, like, away from Jujaiba Center. It's just not. It's not happening. I guess we'll find out who will be at Pier 94, but I don't see. I don't really, I really don't see it. Let's see. What do I want? All right, we'll go into Naruko. Naruko! Remember that show?
Nope.
Okay, I do, because I watched both seasons. And mostly enjoyed the first season. Second season wasn't that great. The only thing that held on, the only thing that kept me going is the fact that it has so many references to other stuff. I can't escape those. But the Nice America license for that has expired, so it's out of print.
Who had that title? Was that a Sentai title?
That was a Nice America title. Remember those?
That's what I thought. Okay.
Remember those people? Yeah, yep. I guess they kind of tapped out of the market.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising. But yeah, I guess this is an interesting time to talk about it, because I'm like, oh, I remember watching you years ago. see you later. Goodbye. So long. Nice so knowing you.
Thanks for all the fish.
And then Funimation made some announcements that I think I said it was San Japan. I think that's what it was. Anime Guitarist, Urohara, and Konohana Kitan, they're going to be released on Blu-ray DVD this December. So that'd be nice, get Anime Guitarist on my Blu-ray and relive.
So we can introduce even more people to that screen.
Relive all of the crazy stuff that actually happened in that show. That'd be great. Fantastic.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, and sort of more licensing announcements. Like we speculated last time, 11 Arts is going to be bringing over Penguin Highway. They're going to be showing that. I think the most we've got in terms of the date is winter 2019. And they're also going to be showing the third Laughing Under the Clouds film sometime in 2019. I gotta say, I'm really surprised they've been making the effort for that film series.
I know, right?
Like,
I feel like
nobody really talked about the anime when it was coming out.
Like, I'm so confused. Like, is this doing well at all for them?
Must be doing well enough. Because they must have a really sucky contract they can't get out of. But yeah, so they're bringing those over. And they're also bringing out Liz and the Bluebird on November 9th. Which, well, it's not gonna conflict so much with Mirai, but are they bringing out Mirai?
It's more like it's gonna come out. It's more like G Kids releasing Mirai in November, so it's like, oh wow, it's gonna be two anime films in the same month. What the heck?
I mean, heck, I've already seen Perfect Blue this month, and I'm gonna see the.
Oh yeah, right.
My Hero Academia movie this month.
Oh right,
too.
It's coming out this month too. Ah, what is happening?
Well, you know, I've been talking about just how many anime films there've been in theaters in the U.S. this year. Been kind of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like you're thinking like. Maybe like what, 3 years ago maybe? You could barely
see. Even 2 years ago you'd get like 3 or 5 films a year, and now I'm seeing one almost every month for a whole year.
Yeah, that's nuts. And it's great. This should be a thing, it really should. I guess the only thing is like is it gonna be an error? That's gonna be the only problem. But other than that, like this is fantastic. This is really good. But yeah, the Penguin Highway thing, I believe it got leaked on Crunchyroll Expo. Like they were, like they had.
Well, they were like, you know, here's the 11 Arts panel. We'll be talking about such things as Penguin Highway. So it's like, well,
yeah, something like yeah. So yeah, they technically there was an error with how they described it.
And then
once
someone who was prominent enough on Twitter pointed it out, they took it down.
Yeah,
I forget who it was, but I think it was like someone with like names that. Someone at Crunchyroll probably followed him.
So I thought that I saw the initial tweet from WTK, who like tweeted out the panel listing and noted that. So I think, oh yeah, that's a pretty popular account. So.
Yeah, because he just somehow like I don't know how that guy is on top of everything so fast. He is not a bot. He is a real person, as far as I can tell, and just gets the news faster than everyone else.
Yeah, just about. But yeah, the Liz and the Bluebird is probably the one I want to see, if only because I watched Sound Euphonium. I still need to watch the second season at some point.
Yeah, you should definitely watch the second season, because these are characters from the second season.
Yeah, so I should probably do that before I watch it. No disrespect to the people who watched or are watching Laughing in the Clouds, but I mean, is people really watching this? Like, Yeah, I don't know what to say about it, I guess. I really don't. I guess power to 11 Arts for bringing it over, honestly. Helen, there's going to be more Saki K.
And then Justin rejoiced.
Yes. Now the only thing to complete the circle is if Viz miraculously brings the manga over. Or we live in a world where people can license almost any manga from Shueisha. So maybe some other publisher will get Saki K.
Go bother Dumpa Books about it. There's a void here that's not currently being filled.
Dylan, fill it, Dumpa. Fill it, Etrevez. Get to it. Get to work. So yeah, I'm excited for that. Curious to see when Netflix will air it, probably in 2020. That'll be fantastic. But yeah, it'll be nice to wrap up the series for sure.
Yeah, and then... Oh, speaking of things wrapping up, but on a different kind of note, we've been talking about various manga magazines which have been folding in the past year, and both Justin and I thought it seemed like a lot. And A&M even did a short article saying that 12 different manga magazines have ended in the first half of 2018 alone.
Yeah, and then this actually isn't like the highest total. Like 14 was actually the most that were canceled in 2014. It's just that the problem is like these are some magazines that have some profile. I wouldn't say like on the level of like a monthly shonen magazine or like Shonen Jump or anything like that. But like Bisasu Hanai to Yume, Monthly Comic Beers, those are some titles. Like there are some manga that have been licensed out of those magazines. So it's just,
yeah, and some like Bisasu Hanai to Yume, I don't know exactly how it's structured, but there are multiple magazines under the Hana to Yume name, so there is potential for like ongoing series in those to at least get moved around.
Yeah, but then the big thing is that they're moving to digital as well.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a number of series which have ended up going digital only after this, that there just isn't another print magazine for them to move into, and I feel like digital only manga is still newish in Japan, so we'll see how that's going.
Yeah,
obviously we've had big hits like Relife and MMO Junkie were both digital only manga, which got anime and all that jazz, but still it's different and new market.
Yeah, and I guess we're still kind of testing it out over here. Like Kanacha's been pretty much
testing it out. You mean like just dumping everything onto the market and seeing if anything sticks?
Yeah,
like, Kanacha, couldn't you guys at least do a little more advertising for your digital manga? Nobody can keep up with you. We need like, I don't know, like dedicated social media accounts just for their digital releases so we can keep track of what's updating when.
Yeah, it's a little,
because they'll do plenty weird of stuff on their Twitter feed, or like every season they're like, oh, we're gonna do an anime watch along, we're gonna live tweet an episode like 3 days after it airs, you know, come along. But then they're like, oh yeah, we just push some stuff on Amazon, no big deal, moving on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they have really like a dedicated social, like I think most
I think most places are just the unpaid intern is doing the social media.
Oh, no, there's definitely...
Oh, it's definitely a paid intern is what you're saying.
No, at least that, or it's actually somebody that is like a social media person there.
I don't get paid at my internship.
The internship thing, yeah. the thing is, like, these kind of high-profile accounts, they actually do at least nowadays have, like, paid, like, full-time or whatever, people working social media. Because it's not just Twitter, it's not even just Facebook, whatever. It's just planning stuff out, like, strategizing, all that stuff. Bless you.
Sorry, couldn't figure out
how to turn off my mic. I'm keeping it in there, by the way. It's a big thing in the industry nowadays. So you gotta be careful what you post and everything, so you just can't have the intern just posting stuff. But for Kodachi, I don't know if they really have anything like that. So they just have people post when they can, and right now they're just posting when they have what stuff's coming out that day, and maybe some Sailor Moon stuff, maybe some Attack on Titan stuff.
I know there's also extensions for Twitter, or like I know people have used things such as TweetDeck in the past where you can schedule tweets in advance.
Yeah, that's probably what they could be doing that too for their releases. It's definitely a possibility. And then they probably, like, it's definitely, like, I just wonder about these digital titles personally. Like, are they selling well enough? And is it, like, I guess, like, certain, like, I kind of assume, it's awful to assume, but, like, if there are titles that go from digital to print, or maybe if they go digital or SoundPub, maybe they're doing fine. So that's basically my thought, but outside of that...
Or they're getting an anime.
Yeah, that too. Or that too. But I just think those are signs that, yeah, it might be doing well, but other than that, Crunch releases so much stuff, digital titles every month, so I just wonder, like, are these doing well? Is something like Days selling well? Is something like Black Panther and the Sweet 16 selling well? Is Shoujo Fight selling well? This stuff, digital manga. You got All Around the Meguru. Wasn't that like a big license people wanted and everything? Is that selling well? You just wonder.
And it also reminds me of an argument used to see being made by manga publishers that, oh, we don't want to license any really long titles because then you'll kind of drop off in sales and all that jazz. And from what I've heard, it's that the cost of buying, you know, if you buy one print volume of manga, say it costs you $10, most of that money goes to, like, staff behind the scenes, translating, editing, cleaning it up. A lot of it doesn't actually go towards the physical printing of the book. So it sounds like the costs for digital manga aren't really much cheaper than print. And so it's kind of crazy to see them release maybe not two series that are both 20-plus volumes long, but like 10 book series, which are all 3-plus volumes long. So they're actually putting out, you know, still a lot of stuff. And as we've discussed before, you know, the two of us are starting to wonder, can the manga market in the U.S. continue to hold up? Like, are we getting to a point when readers are feeling overwhelmed? Because the two of us feel overwhelmed. I don't think my to-read pile has budged in months in size. I feel like it just keeps getting, like, eternally replenished.
I just feel happy when I do get a chance to, like, read something and finish it. So.
Like, a thing.
Yeah, I'm always happy about that. Yeah, but honestly, I think the market is in a healthy place. It's just that what's going to happen if Barnes & Noble goes? That's going
to
be the killer.
I don't think they're likely to go.
I mean,
Justin, do you have insider trading? If you do, you got to
share
it now.
It's more like if you read, like, online and look at the sales, they haven't really gone up. And Chris Lee has been covering Barnes & Noble for a good year.
There's no growth isn't necessarily a bad sign. I mean, large, unsustainable growth is a different thing. Like, when you look at, like, the GDP growth in China at, like, 5%, you might think, oh, that's good, 5%. But on the other hand, you look and you go, that's not sustainable. This is going to hurt more than
remember,
it helps in the long run.
It's not just that. It's the fact that we had, like, didn't they leave? I'm pretty sure they had to lay off a couple of their employees. I think the CEO, there was an issue with the CEO not too long ago.
I think there was some restructuring. All I know is that in my area, we have almost none left, but that's because of, like, the landlord of this particular building doesn't want Barnes & Noble anymore for, like, really specific local issues that aren't reflective of the company as a whole. And in, like, the D.C. area, we've got actually a number of independent bookstores that all do well, so...
Right. Well, okay, but I guess my thing is, like, I guess I wouldn't say, like, Barnes & Noble is going to drop off the face of the earth, like, immediately.
You're worried about a repeat of Borders. Like, I'm worried about an entirely different issue.
I'm just saying, it's worth keeping an eye on for sure for Barnes & Noble.
I'm saying that Barnes & Noble is in a very different place than Borders was at the time.
We can only hope.
And the manga market is in a very different place too.
That too. Alright, Helen. I think it's time we're moving to weird news.
Mm-hmm.
This news we're about to announce is actually really sad, so I'm gonna have to let you go first and break it all down to everybody.
You want me to steal the thunder and give your Conan news?
Definitely, we're leaving that last. You want to lead the podcast with that? You really do?
I mean, you're the one who put both these news articles in, so you should be talking about both of them.
Oh my god! All right. Fine. All right, weird listeners, it's sad. Well, we knew this day was going to come because he kept saying so much dumb stuff. But Yamakon has got his account suspended, and he's
on Twitter,
likely,
which is the weird thing. So I could have sworn he had already been kicked off Twitter by this point.
The thing is, he might just not have tweeted or anything. I don't know, but yeah, it was never really. I don't know if anybody formally, like, looked it up or whatever. In fact, I think the only reason we knew is because he announced it on he broke the news on his blog. I think that's the only reason why.
He's been,
yeah. I don't know if he's a band. Because he said, like, I think the reason that there was a follow-up article, I don't think it was banned for sure. He just got his account suspended. So, like, even if he gets his account back, he announced on his blog that he's not coming back to Twitter.
Oh, okay. So that's what the news is. He's not coming back.
Yeah. Then. So he's finally done. And I guess the first question is, why did it take so long? What happened to this guy again? Like, I remember he...
Sounds like Yamakon was just a bad apple from the start. Like, I mean, like... Didn't Kyoto Animation basically kick him out of being the director for Lucky Star after 4 episodes because he was just
such a
pain to work with?
I have no idea.
That's basically what's whispered in hushed tones, that he was just that unpleasant to work with. They kicked him out.
I didn't even know he did Lucky Star.
Yeah, like the first 4 episodes, I think.
Had no idea.
I guess this makes me the resident Yamakon expert then.
And
not a title I wanted.
But yeah, like, he should have just stuck with making more... Didn't he do Senyu? That really short comedy? Was it director of that?
I don't know. I didn't like that one,
he should have just stuck to that. Hey, it was fine enough. We should have just stuck to that.
It was boring.
Should have just stuck to that. That's what he should have done. Now, he did... And then after that, he did Wake Up Girls, and then, well, we know what happened after that.
He can't even remember the names of the girls.
It's just bad. It's just very disappointing. And good riddance, honestly. Like, see, man, you had your chance. You had plenty of chances. Plenty. See you next time. And I guess the final weird news, which is an update of a weird news segment we covered.
I mean, basically all of our Yamakon weird news is our updates of Yamakon in general.
Okay, true. But usually it's just reserved to Yamakon. It's usually nothing else other than Yamakon. But instead, we actually update something on Conan O'Brien. Yes, that Conan O'Brien, because we talked about last podcast about him being very salty about him not being number one in Japan, because Conan himself, the Detective Conan, is actually very popular in Japan. So,
and very popular in Justin's heart.
And in my heart, and maybe some other people's hearts, like Alcina's. And Conan... decided, yeah, you know what? I challenge. He threw it on a challenge, and it was kind of adorable. The mayor of Conan Town, he actually, I think he said this all in English too. Like it was on Facebook, where he actually did also challenge Conan O'Brien himself about all this. It was kind of adorable. So we had that. Both listed their challenges, and then that led to Conan O'Brien going to Japan.
He's been tweeting out many funny pictures from his trip.
Yep.
And by funny, I mean they make him look stupid.
So. Really stupid. And it didn't go... And then when he got there, it didn't quite go off that well, because he actually got to the... He went to the Wong Airport. He didn't realize there was more than one airport in Japan. Or maybe, like, one of his, like, whoever's coordinating and everything didn't realize that. So he went to the wrong airport, so that meant the people who were actually waiting for him at the airport that he was supposed to be at were still waiting there. But he did.
That sounds so weird. It sounds like you would just tell people, "Oh, this is the flight in," and they'd be able to look it up.
That's so weird. Yeah, but it wasn't that far away, so they got there. He got there at a decent time and still said hi to their fans, whatever. Then they had this segment where he met the mayor. They had a little fun, served out hamburgers because I guess American hamburgers, yay! Did that. Then they. He took a picture with the statue of Conan, obviously Conan Edogawa. So yeah, all in all, good fun. I guess the only last follow up is I think he's gonna do another video of that on his show, and that'll probably be it. Boom. Popularity for Detective Conan has increased by like 0.1%. Wow. You were more optimistic than me.
No, it's more along the lines that the popularity is already so low that anything would make it increase by a large amount.
I mean, I said 0.1, you said 0.2.
Yeah, but, like, I'm saying that I think the fandom is even smaller than you think it is, so that this will have an outsized effect on it.
Look, so I'm actually somebody, even more cynical. Whoever is watching Conan, I should have looked up the numbers, but there's probably a decent amount of viewership for Conan.
In the U.S., yes.
I think there's the visa viewership. At least one of those people is going to be like, all right, I should probably give this manga a look. They'll find out that, oh no. First of all, it's going to be all awful because they see like, all right, I'm going to look into this this manga or this series. What's it? Okay, it's called Take the Conan. Why can't I find her online? Oh, wait. It's called Case Closed. Oh, wait. It's this guy named Conan, but it says his name is Jimmy in the dub. in the manga too, his name is Jimmy Kudo, but I thought, what's his name is what's happening here? Gonna be so confused.
I mean, I could have sworn that Conan was just like his alias anyway.
It's just a thing, like, you're gonna get it, for a start, it's not called it's called Case Closed here, so it's,
yes,
like,
I know, Justin.
They're just gonna be so confused. I can already see it now, the confusion.
Justin,
but yeah, you're right about,
I'm sure people know how to use Google, and that Google knows to take them to Wikipedia, where it explains the naming situation. Doesn't just call them your tits.
But I want Conan to be popular, and Viz to stop releasing it 3 times a year, although I'm asking a lot.
I mean, really, that's more series than Kaze Hikaru, but they're releasing that like one volume a year.
Yeah, well, that might be due to its publication. I think, isn't it like a
monthly
series?
No. They're like very far behind Japan.
Oh, no. Is it like Hayate and the Combat Butler? Because they're also behind on that. And they released that 2 times a year.
It's more along the lines of, it seems like it's more of a contractual obligation for them to keep publishing it at this point than something they're actually trying to make money on.
It's so sad. Oh. But yeah, this is the biggest advertiser Conan has gotten in ages. Live it up. Live it up, Conan fans. Live it up.
Now I'm just waiting for him to do a follow-up segment on Conan the Barbarian.
Well, he might have done that already.
Oh, darn it. Never mind.
Maybe. I don't know. But maybe. He might have done it already.
But with that, I think we've wrapped up a shorter than usual version of the podcast, which is fine by me. I can just get back to homework. Ugh.
I can actually get back to editing stuff. Like, yeah. Helen's upcoming review of My Solo Exchange Diary, which should be up maybe this week. Like, by the time this podcast goes up, it should be up already.
Yeah, let's hope. If it doesn't, that means I had some real structural issues in my graph. But otherwise, if anyone wants to distract me from my homework, you can go bother me on Twitter, @WanderingDreamer, or you can go... I guess this would be more using your time than anything else, but you could listen to this other podcast I do, Manga in Your Ears, which we're going to have Justin on at some point. I think we've already got you committed for something, so...
No, you don't. Not yet.
There was definitely some time where I think you were talking about something on Twitter, and Corey's like, we should have you on the podcast, which is a commitment you have to understand.
Yeah, it was the Tokyo Tower Barrel Girls, but I had to say no.
We'll have you back on some other time anyway. No. When Corey said you're going to be on at some point. He does not joke about these things.
Oh, boy. Well, Corey, I accept your challenge. See if you can try your best.
Don't worry, Corey. I have a Skype address.
You already know my handle. Kami_Nomi @me. And maybe we'll set something up. I have no idea of my time. I have to figure my schedule. But, yeah. Feel free to subscribe to the OSG podcast. It's Not My Fault the Yoshi Podcast is not popular on Apple Podcasts, Android, or should be on... We also have Google Podcasts. We have a Google Podcast now, huh?
Does anyone use that?
I have no idea. This was just added. I guess we had an update, and then, oh, you have Google Podcasts. We'll just... Oh, there you go. So, yeah, follow us on those. Leave us a comment, rating. Let us know how we're doing in the comments. Boom.
You know, the usual stuff.
Simple enough, guys. All right? Simple enough. Mm-hmm. So, until next time, Justin is out.
Bye, y'all.